This is Digital Dave.
And I'm still Fast Eddie, unfortunately.
Well, we'll forgive you for that.
Yeah.
For the moment, anyway.
We'll muddle through it.
Okay.
And with us today, guess what? Steven Strollo from Phillips 66. And what's he going to do? He's going to grease us all up. We're going to talk
my
about
goodness.
Oils and lubricants.
Okay.
That's
I
right.
will refrain from further comment
Stop
on that.
Stop it.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid my topic is going to be rather prosaic compared to your previous guest.
But there you go.
Like you say, oil is the lifeblood of your engine. So.
Exactly.
And how many of us just don't really pay much attention to it?
Some don't. Although there are a lot of very enthusiastic people who have been stopping by our tent with lots of very good questions. So the general aviation community seems to be more interested in, well, in their planes and lubrication and everything else that entails their engine.
I think they're more interested in preserving their checkbook from engine failures.
That's it.
Well, sure. That's true. That's true.
Now, they always talk about ash dispersant oil. What exactly does that mean?
Ashless dispersant? Well, it's as the name implies, it's... it's a dispersant that keeps contaminants in suspension, and there are quite a few that get into a piston aviation engine oil, an air-cooled engine, mostly blow-by gases, but there are also wear metal particles and other contaminants as well. So the dispersant keeps these contaminants in suspension, which allows them not to settle out and clog oil passageways and ring grooves and things like that. And also, by keeping them in suspension, the contaminants, it allows you to drain them out when you change your oil, right?
So you always recommend draining oil hot.
That's right. You know, because despite the fact that the ashless dispersant exists in there, there'll still be some settling. So if you were to drain the oil when it's hot, you're more likely to have those contaminants that I just mentioned in suspension. And the term ashless comes into the term ashless dispersant because when you burn, it's an additive, the ashless dispersant additive, and when you burn it in the combustion process, it leaves no ash behind, right?
Okay.
It just completely goes out the exhaust port, which is why aviation oils are quite a bit different than over-the-road engine oils. When I say over-the-road engine oils, I mean for cars and trucks. Those oils are radically different from a number of perspectives, probably the most significant being the additive chemistry, right?
Okay.
All oils have got additives in them. Your over-the-road oils have got a lot of metallic additives. You know, they've got metallic-type detergent additives, calcium and magnesium and other things. And they have anti-wear additives, primarily ZDDP, which contains zinc, which is a metal additive. And the reason why you'd never want to use an automobile oil in an aviation engine, at least a Lycoming or a Continental, is, again, because of the oil consumption rate. On average, and you two probably know this better than I do, the average aviation engine burns maybe a quart every 8 hours or so. Most of that oil goes right out the exhaust port. But if you're using an oil with a lot of metallic additives, that is, an over-the-road type oil, these metallic additives could accumulate in your combustion chamber, glow and get red hot and lead to pre-ignition.
Detonation, okay. Yeah, which destroys the engine.
That's right. So to meet the specification that all these oils do, whether it's Phillips 66 or AeroShell, the specification being SAE J1899, which is, you know, spelled out in Lycoming and Continental Service Bulletins, one of the many things that you need to do to meet that qualification is to have an oil without any metallic additives in it.
Let's talk synthetic versus mineral. I've got a whiz-bang special that's 50 years old. It's run on mineral oil its whole life.
Yeah.
Can I switch it to synthetic?
Well, there are no synthetic oils, fully synthetic oils, for general aviation engines. Mobile One had one. You remember that then? And it failed dismally, right?
Oh.
And it failed. Do you remember that then?
No, I don't.
No, I don't.
Well, it's probably been, let's say, 35 years ago. Probably before you two were born. I
yeah. No. Older than I look, but anyway.
And it did fail. I used the word dismally, and that's, you know, that's not hyperbole. It had to be taken off the market, and it actually, I think they had to replace a number of engines as well. And the reason for that is it had the inability, it could not dissolve lead salts that occur from burning lead to fuel, right? The tetraethyl lead and 100 low lead.
Yeah, and then there's so much of it.
That's right. And that's, you know, so that's why there's not a full synthetic piston aviation engine oil. There are semi-synthetics, right? Phillips has never been a proponent of semi-synthetics for general aviation oils. for the reason I stated, right? It's half mineral oil and half synthetic, and therefore doesn't have quite the ability to dissolve these lead salts like a full mineral oil will. And when I say mineral oil, I'm talking about refined crude oil that comes out of the ground. General right. aviation seems to have this misconception about what a mineral oil is, right?
Right.
People in general aviation, when they say mineral oil, they think of break-in oil. Well, by definition, mineral oil is a refined crude oil, right, is what it is. I'll just say this, one last thing about that particular topic. Only about 1% of the oil that Phillips sells are general aviation oil. Most of the oil we sell are for cars and trucks.
There's more of them.
Oh, I've noticed that.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
I noticed that this morning driving down from Green Bay. You know, there's quite a few cars on this.
I bet we could sell a lot of oil.
Yeah.
So most of the over-road, nearly every single over-the-road oil that we sell, not just Phillips, but all the major manufacturers, are either full synthetic or semi-synthetic. And it is a superior oil, full synthetic or semi-synthetic, but none of those engines are burning leaded fuel, right?
Right.
So that lead solvency issue associated with a mineral oil being superior with a mineral oil isn't a factor there.
Well, that begs the question, eventually 100 low lead's going away.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys looking at reformulating as a result? I mean, I don't understand what the replacement's going to be quite yet.
Yeah, we're looking at a few different things, but I think the verdict is still out as to whether or not we would introduce a semi-synthetic, you know. I mean, one of the advantages of using a semi-synthetic is, you know, you could probably extend your oil drain interval, and that's not something we would suggest, at least not for a general aviation engine, right? I mean, both Continental and Lycoming have oil change guidance that's every 50 hours or 4 months, right? People get really hung up and don't like the four-month drain interval, but that's the engine manufacturer's primary mechanism of removing condensation, moisture, from the sump that accumulates in an engine from, you know, just sitting for as long as these planes do, right? I mean, most general aviation owners and operators don't fly every day, and you know better than I, the planes sit for quite a bit. And when that happens, there's moisture that condenses in the sump, and it leads to rust and corrosion. That's where the four-month came in. Right, so
at 3.5 months, I'm going to go out and start the engine up for an hour and let it sit on the ground, then shut it off.
Well, you know, the important thing in relation to your statement is if you're starting it to warm it up and keep things
and drive the moisture out.
Exactly. Make sure that you do operate it at a high enough temperature to drive off the moisture, because the thing to realize is you generate about 2 gallons of water for every 1 gallon of fuel you burn, which is hard to believe.
But yeah.
So, again, that's why you need to get the engine up to a sufficient temperature to evaporate off that water. So a lot of people will do sort of just what you said, but not for an hour. They'll just do it for a couple minutes.
Yeah,
or so,
that's not enough.
Which is probably more detrimental than helpful.
Yep.
Well, you know, the operating conditions on aircraft engines are a lot different from, say, an over-the-road vehicle, because at highway speeds, you're cruising about 10% power.
Sure.
With an airplane, if you're 70% cruise, you're using 70%
right,
of the power.
Right.
The temperatures and pressures and everything are much different.
Good point. Good point.
And, you know, I can
I'm
understand.
Waiting for them to go, hey, we never thought of that.
Yeah, really. No, I'm pretty sure that they're in there. But another issue that has come up, and that has to do with moisture, is rust in the engine. And I've heard a couple of people talking about additives to help prevent rust, aftermarket products.
Sure, sure.
What is your experience with those?
Well, there are some that are highly effective. I don't know if I can mention names.
That's up to you.
It's up to you.
Okay. Well, CamGuard is a very effective rust and corrosion inhibitor. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, if you're changing your oil when you're supposed to, there's really not a need to use it. When I say when you're supposed to, as far as an oil changing interval, it'll be, again, every 50 hours or 4 months. But a less expensive alternative, and again, I'm not throwing rocks at CamGuard. We've tested it's effective. But a less expensive alternative would be to use a 10% concentration of our Phillips 66 anti-rust oil, right?
Okay.
It's a pickling oil, and for long-term storage, you'd use it at 100% concentration. But for people who aren't changing their oil every 4 months or 50 hours, you know, they fly 50 hours a year and change your oil the annual, a 10% concentration of that oil would be very effective in eliminating rust and corrosion.
Because that's a big deal. Once you get rust and corrosion in an engine, you got a double whammy.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That metal is not going to come back, so to speak, and mm-hmm. the rust particles are abrasive. And so
right.
until you actually drain that out of there, which is where the ashless dispersion comes in, but until you drain that rust out of there, it's going to act like a lapping compound, but you're still going to have damage to your, you know, your cylinder yep. barrel and your cam and everything else associated with that rust. So, yeah, it's a very real problem.
You can easily shred an engine because of rust.
Right, right.
I want to know how much you've had to change your oils to accommodate these Rotax-style engines, small displacement engines running very high RPM.
Yeah. Well, Rotax, that's a very good question. We don't have an oil that's approved for Rotax.
Oh!
Not for lack of effort. I don't know if anybody's listening from Rotax, but we've approached them frequently over the last 10 years trying to qualify an oil for the Rotax engine, trying to get them to test our oil. Willingness to pay for all the testing as well. They're not interested. They're not interested.
They're having too much fun selling engines.
Well, or their own oil that they just released.
Yeah, right. They have a brother-in-law
right.
in the business.
Yes, exactly.
So for, you know, Rotax owners and operators are... Well, in my opinion, they're doing a disservice because
yeah.
the oil is not that special. I mean, it's as far as from a formulation standpoint. So I can't really answer any questions about Rotax oils.
Okay. All right. We've been speaking with Steve Strollo of Phillips 66 about oil and lubricant, the often overlooked super important thing.
You really made that
yes.
one good.
It's going down the tubes rapidly.
Yeah.
Swirling the drain.
This is Digital Dave.
Fast Eddie, enjoying the view. And
we used to work for EA
Radio.